This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 € pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, Microsoft announces a major leap forward in the race towards quantum computing. New York could lose its congestion charge after just a month of operation, after the Trump administration withdraws its backing. Nigeria sues the crypto exchange Binance for over $80 billion. We'll have a look at how Germany's faltering economy is affecting voters' views ahead of this week's election. And as authorities in the Philippines put a bounty on mosquitoes' heads to try to eradicate a lethal disease, we ask the experts whether money will do the trick.
Given the vast numbers of mosquitoes, I seriously doubt if bounty system is going to make a dent in the mosquito population.
But first, quantum is one of those words that seem to be applied to anything that's new and dramatic. Think quantum leap. But what's just been announced by Microsoft does genuinely seem to be a leap in the field of quantum computing. It's a technology that promises vastly superior processing speeds compared to today's computers. All the big names in tech have been pushing advances in this area. But Microsoft says its Majorana 1 chip could bring practical quantum computing within reach in years rather than decades. Well, Dr. Chetan Nayak from the Microsoft quantum hardware team behind this new chip has been explaining it.
So we really hit a Goldilocks scale where they're not too small that you can't do anything with them, but they're not large that you end up needing a warehouse to make a usable quantum computer.
Dr. Chetan Nayak, so what is quantum computing? How would it change our lives? And is this a genuine breakthrough? Joining me now is Scott Aaronson, Professor of Computer Science, who heads the Quantum Information Center at the University of Texas at Austin. Scott, thanks so much for being with us here on World Business Report. I mean, a very basic question
thanks
to start with.
Me.
What is quantum computing?
So quantum computing means harnessing the rules of quantum mechanics that we've actually known about for 100 years to try to solve certain specific problems much faster than we know how to solve them using current computers. It's not easy to explain that in one sentence, but quantum mechanics gives us a different set of rules for calculating the probability that something will happen. And in particular, it allows an effect called interference, where the different contributions to the probability of seeing something can cancel each other out. So with quantum computing, the goal is always to choreograph things so that for each wrong answer, the contributions to it are destructively interfering, canceling each other out, whereas the contributions to the right answer are adding up, interfering constructively.
Well, I won't pretend that I completely understand what you're saying there, but I think I've got the sense of it. But what in practical terms would it do if we were able to use quantum computing?
So the biggest applications that we know about for a quantum computer, number one, simulating quantum physics and chemistry themselves. That was the original application that physicists like Richard Feynman and David Deutsch had in mind when they proposed the idea of a quantum computer more than 40 years ago. And that's still the economically most important thing we know, because that could help anyone who is designing new materials, new drugs, photovoltaics, batteries. These all involve many-body quantum mechanics problems, where the number of parameters that you need to keep track of scales exponentially with the number of particles that you're trying to model. And so this is, in some sense, what a quantum computer is designed for. It's a specialized class of applications. You know, it's not you know, what most people are using their computers for. It's not checking your email or, you know, playing Candy Crush or, you know, whatever. But it's, you know, these things can be important. Now, the other big application of quantum computers, the one that put them on the map for most of the world, was that it was discovered in the 1990s that quantum computers could break most of the encryption that currently protects the internet. Okay, so that includes, you know, whenever you use your web browser to order things online, your credit card number is protected by these certain cryptographic codes that depend on the belief that certain problems are very hard, such as factoring large numbers, you know, finding the prime factors of huge numbers, and some other problems in number theory that turn out to be perfectly suited to a quantum computer. That you can, we know how to arrange these interference patterns to solve those problems quickly. Now, within the last 15 years, there's been a tremendous amount of hype about quantum computers, and you know, hundreds of startup companies being formed, often telling investors, you know, telling the public that quantum computers are going to speed up everything. You know, so machine learning and AI and optimization and finance and vehicle routing. I think it's very important for your listeners to understand that, you know, I think like at least 90% of that is hype.
Well, okay. if that's yeah. hype, Scott, yeah. I mean, just yes. on this point, Majorana yes. 1, this new Microsoft mm-hmm. product, yes. is it the breakthrough yes. they say it is?
Well, I think it is a very, you know, a really, really nice scientific breakthrough in building hardware. I mean, people have been trying for decades to build what we call a topological qubit, which is a, you know, a quantum bit, you know, a basic building block of a quantum computer, a qubit whose quantum state would be sort of inherently protected for topological reasons, right? So this is something people have wanted for a long time. Microsoft appears to have finally demonstrated that, you know, and they've been pursuing it for a while. They yeah. had a claim to build, you know, one of the building blocks called a Majorana zero mode in 2018 that had to be retracted. You know, that was wrong. Okay, but, you know, this seems like a more solid claim. You know, I hope that it holds up. It's important to understand that even assuming they've succeeded, we're talking about one topological qubit.
Right.
Okay, to really build a useful quantum computer, you're going to want, you know, at least thousands, probably millions.
But it's a
two.
Significant step on the way by the side of it. Scott,
yes,
thanks so
absolutely.
Much for being sure. with us and explaining sure. that in a comprehensible way. So many thanks for doing that. Scott Aaronson there of the University of Texas at Austin. Now, congestion charging in big cities, making you pay to drive into the busiest areas, is not universally popular. But it is widespread in the biggest urban centres in Europe, and for about a month it has been in New York too, but not anymore. The federal government, in the person of the US Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, is withdrawing support for the scheme. Ending it was a Donald Trump campaign pledge, in fact, and in the last few hours he posted this on Truth Social: congestion pricing is dead, Manhattan and all of New York is saved, long live the king. Here's how the story broke on CBS News a short time ago.
I'm Jessica Moore with breaking news. We have just learned the Trump administration is pulling the approval for congestion pricing. The Department of Transportation is sending a letter to Governor Hochul this afternoon saying it is, quote, backward and unfair. We have a copy of that letter.
Well, I've been speaking about this to Tiffany Ann Taylor. She's vice president for transportation at the Regional Plan Association and one of the architects of the New York congestion charge policy.
Well, it's been a shock, to say the least. Well, maybe it's a shock, but perhaps not a surprise, if I can explain. President Trump has stated before he came into office and since he's been into office that he was seeking to cancel or rescind the activation of the congestion pricing program. But to date, we've known that the program has been successful, and we weren't really hearing anything through the political grapevine. So we were pretty much confident that the program would continue. So today, it actually has been a shock to hear that USDOT has rescinded the permission of the program.
Just for people who don't know, why does it matter what the federal government does? Because presumably it comes under the administration of New York.
Yeah, this is where it gets confusing, perhaps, for some of your listeners. So the program approval, because of the intensity of the program and the fact that it's affecting multiple counties that are even beyond the boundaries of New York City, required federal approval from our Federal Highway Administration, or FHWA, which is a part of the larger, obviously, U.S. government under U.S. DOT, Department of Transportation. So the piece of paper at the end of the day, which is called a finding of no significant impact, was approved by FHWA, which essentially permitted the program to start. So with today's announcement, Secretary Duffy from USDOT has said that the FHWA actually did not have the authority to approve that program for a number of reasons, as stated in his letter, and because of that has ordered that the program be halted.
So does that mean it'll stop right away?
That, I think, is unclear. To be honest, I'm reacting to you in real time. But I do understand that the MTA, which is the agency that is conducting congestion pricing, will be having a press event later today where we will learn more. My understanding is that the MTA has filed a lawsuit, or a suit rather, in court to at least allow the program to continue. So you and I and all of your other listeners will be learning this information in real time.
Well, I can bring you up to speed on that by saying the MTA have filed suit, indeed, and they're saying the withdrawal of approval from the program is for blatantly political reasons. Do you read it the same way?
Yes, I do. We have early indication, even though it's only been a month, that the program is working. There has been a reduction in congestion. There has been improvements in local bus speeds and travel speeds. We've also seen a reduction in traffic crashes and incidences with pedestrians. We've seen increases in pedestrian activity and increases in activity in certain business districts like Times Square. So we already were seeing benefits. The MTA board actually was about to give a presentation next week on more progress on the system. We would have learned for the first time what the revenue generation has been. And so my hope is that it had been positive, but we're going to have to wait and see what information is released about that.
Well, Donald Trump has in the past criticized, as you say, as has the U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, saying it left drivers without any free highway alternative and instead took more money from working people to pay for the transit system, not highways. I mean, he has a point about where the money is going, doesn't he?
Not exactly, because the money is dedicated to capital investments, the capital program, and investing in the MTA's capital system is actually a benefit both for drivers and non-drivers. It's a direct benefit for those who are absolutely using the system or switching to the system after they've driven in. And for drivers, it's still supporting the economic livelihood of our region, which is the MTA.
So New Yorkers are better off with it than without it.
Absolutely. And, you know, the facts are shown that there are countries that definitely have their version of congestion pricing. And we've seen the benefits over time. And just in the short 30 days since the beginning of this program in the United States, we've seen the benefits as well. So I believe it's short-sighted to cancel the program so soon, if at all.
Tiffany Ann Taylor there speaking to me earlier. Let's talk about what's been going on in the international economical markets. Susan Schmidt, Portfolio Manager, Exchange Capital Resources, Chicago, joins me now. Susan, thanks for being with us. One interesting thing, the minutes from the Federal Reserve's last meeting, have been published. Now, this is interesting because we get us insight into their thinking in terms of what they're going to do as far as interest rates are concerned. What have we learned?
Well, we saw more nuances on Chairman Powell's statements about how the Fed is looking at things and echoing what we've heard from others. There's a lot of uncertainty as to how changes from the President Trump administration will impact the economy. It does seem to be from the minutes that the Fed is very strong in their stance that they want to make sure that inflation is coming under control. They have, quote, a high degree of uncertainty right now in the economic backdrop. And that relates to President Trump's tariffs and how that might impact the economy, prices, and supply chains. And so investors expect that the Fed will not increase interest rates anytime soon and that they'll be in a holding pattern for the next several months.
Yeah, it's interesting. And at the same time, of course, we have the UK inflation figures up a bit, 3%. I mean, a sign that in the Western world, inflation isn't beaten yet.
Definitely not, and something that the central banks are aware of. The challenge now is to balance the desire for economic growth against those higher interest rates, trying to keep inflation in check.
We'll see how it all pans out. Thanks so much for being with us, Susan. Susan Schmidt there, portfolio manager at Exchange Capital Resources in Chicago. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
Now, the cryptocurrency exchange Binance has been served with a writ by the government of Nigeria for $81.5 billion in damages, accusing the platform of causing economic harm and evading taxes. The lawsuit, filed by Nigeria's Federal Inland Revenue Service at the Federal High Court in Abuja on Tuesday, includes a $79.5 billion claim for alleged economic losses linked to Binance's operations in the country. It also demands $2 billion back in back taxes. Well, I've been speaking about this to our Africa business correspondent, Chiamaka Anendu.
The Nigerian government insists that Binance caused troubles, especially for the Nigerian currency, the Naira, where we did see the Naira, you know, do very poorly in the international market and in the exchange rate market. The Nigerian government insists that this did have very huge impact on the Naira, with the Naira trading very poorly against other international currencies. So the Nigerian government is insisting that Binance is expected to pay $81.5 billion in damages, and also is expecting for Binance to pay $2 billion in back taxes.
Okay, well, the taxes, I suppose, is one thing, but this economic harm, how is it that a cryptocurrency exchange could cause harm to the Nigerian currency? What's the mechanism?
Looking back, I recall during the period where Binance was quite operational here in Nigeria, people would, you know, rather go with the exchange rate that was stated on Binance, which the Nigerian government had insisted that this was due to speculations and had cost for even more increased speculation across the market. We have seen, you know, the market being largely impacted. Binance had said that this was due to, you know, the economic policies that had been put in place at the time. But the Nigerian government, for some reason, has consistently said that Binance was a major contributor to the free fall of the Naira.
So Binance isn't even registered in Nigeria, so it's going to be a hard ask for the tax authorities to claim the tax from them.
Binance has never been registered in Nigeria, and we still haven't heard from Binance, you know, in regarding the lawsuit. But Binance had previously stated that it was working with the Federal Inland Revenue Service to address concerns around tax. But the tax authorities have argued that Binance has significant economic presence in Nigeria and should therefore pay corporate income tax.
Yeah, because I think since March last year, Binance hasn't actually dealt in Naira, hasn't traded in Nigeria at all. So, I mean, it's all historical, isn't it?
It is historical, like you have called it. The journey that Binance underwent in Nigeria, unfortunately, hasn't been a palatable one. We saw, you know, the arrest of officials, of Binance officials in Nigeria, and the eventual release of these officials and the eventual closure of, you know, Binance operations in Nigeria. So Binance hasn't had a presence in Nigeria for the past 1 year.
Our Africa business correspondent, Chiamaka Anendu there. Now, Germans are heading to the ballot box on Sunday to cast their votes in a snap federal election. One of the main issues in this vote is the economy, which is struggling. Germany's economy is Europe's largest, but contracted by 0.2% in 2024, and it's forecast to grow only 0.3% in 2025. Kevin Kainers is a reporter in Berlin, and he's been talking to people in the city's Treptower Park about how the economy is shaping their vote in this election.
I regularly watch the daily news, so I know that the economic situation is bad.
Margaret Rader is a retired doctor. She watches the news every day, which here is full of stories about the struggling economy. I spoke to her on a brisk, cloudy day here in Treptower Park, a large grassy area lined with trees in the south of Berlin, which is a popular place for locals to take a walk and chat with friends on a winter's day. Many of the conversations I heard were about politics, with the election and the cost of living on people's minds.
Das weiß ich schon. Also, es sieht nicht gut aus und es scheint.
So it doesn't look good, and it seems that people are trying to explain it by saying that energy has become too expensive, and that this has made the economy too expensive compared to other countries.
In Deutschland, der Wirtschaftsstand zu teuer ist im Vergleich zum Ausland.
A few meters away, I met a retired teacher. He was relaxing on a bench as he waited for his wife.
The economic situation is difficult.
He also pinned some of the blame for the poor economic situation on high energy prices. But all sorts of expenses have gone up for him. He notices it every time he goes to shop for groceries.
Just as an example, I like to bake cakes. And if you buy yeast before Corona, it costs 9 cents a pack. Then went up to 15 cents, and now it's 19 cents. That's more than 100% increase. And that's just one example. There are other examples too. Broadly speaking, the food sector, including fruit and everything else.
According to one recent poll by the public service TV station ZDF, 44% of German voters said the economy was the most important factor influencing their choice. That certainly seemed to be the case back in the park.
Mm-hmm. My name is Tanya, and I'm a teacher here in Berlin.
Tanya says she feels safe in her job, but says many other people are dealing with growing uncertainty.
For individuals, I think it's harder because there are a lot of mini jobs that are temporary jobs or that you ask to come in to work for a couple of hours and then you're released again. So it's very unstable, the situation for non-academics, so to say.
Ricardo is 30.
I'm a veterinarian.
He moved to Germany as a teen and got his citizenship 5 years ago. He says because so many people bought pets during the pandemic, his job is going well. But he says that people around him are having a much harder time.
Many people are struggling to find jobs after being cut from their companies.
Do you have friends like that?
Yeah, some friends, in the artistic field. More of like visual arts. I also have a very close friend, which is a photographer. He's fine, but sometimes there's also periods where he doesn't get any work at all. So it's very, for some people, it's very unpredictable, I guess.
All of this economic uncertainty is having a knock-on effect on politics. People are finding costs going up across the board, including on rent. And as our retired teacher says, that's affecting how people might vote.
Fortunately, we're not so tight that we can't pay for it. But there are a lot of people who are living on the edge, and I don't know how they're managing now. So I can well imagine that they are dissatisfied and maybe won't vote the way the mainstream would like them to.
And that way, well, the far-right Alternative für Deutschland, or AfD, is expected to do well in this election, which is even more of a concern for most people I spoke to than the economy. The party has been consistently polling second in Germany for more than a year and a half.
Die Wirtschaft,
the economy, I'm more influenced by the danger from the right.
Die Gefahr von rechts.
The economy, I don't really know how to improve it either.
some Germans, speaking to Kevin Kainers in Berlin about that election, which is coming up on Sunday. Now, a local government in the Philippines has come up with an unusual way to combat dengue fever. Carlito Sernal, village chief of Barangay Adition Hills in central Manila, announced that he'd pay 1 peso, that's less than 2 US cents, for every 5 mosquitoes that were brought in. Dengue fever is transmitted by certain species of mosquito, and there's been a spike in dengue cases recently. The program, which will run for at least a month, was started after 2 students in Mr. Kernal's neighborhood died from the disease. It drew swift ridicule, however, after it was announced late on Tuesday. Mosquito farming is coming, one social media comment read. Will a mosquito get rejected if it's only got one wing? Read another. Well, I asked the professor Vikas Mehrotra from the School of Business at the University of Alberta if it was a good and effective way of controlling mosquitoes.
The answer to would it be effective, I'm doubtful. I'm really doubtful. Given the vast numbers of mosquitoes that would be prevalent, I seriously doubt if bounty system is going to make a dent in the mosquito population. But your first question was different. Would it be a right way to go about it? There, it could be. It could have positives. For example, it definitely raises awareness. Awareness about how mosquitoes breed. You need to understand all of these things before you start catching mosquitoes.
If you raise awareness, that's obviously important. But in terms of actually getting rid of the mosquitoes, I guess it's not going to be that effective because they must be quite hard to catch.
Absolutely. If you want to catch mosquitoes, the best thing to do would be to go near stagnant water and collect the larvae before they start flying away. That would be the best way to do this. However, I doubt if that's very effective given the numbers involved. And it will not work if other things are also not done in parallel. For example, I'm pretty sure the health authorities in Manila are also working in parallel with other more tried and trusted means of eradicating mosquitoes populations.
I was going to say, what are the more effective means then? Because I understand the government in Manila has talked about maintaining the cleanliness of surroundings, destroying potential mosquito breeding sites and tires, things like that, and wearing long-sleeve shirts and trousers, using mosquito repellent. I mean, we're familiar with all those, but are they effective either?
Well, they're certainly more effective than catching 10 mosquitoes in 2 hours. The way I would look at it is in Manila, if the imperative here is to look at dengue fever, at the increasing incidence of dengue fever, then spraying mosquito sites would be a good thing to do.
Just to interrupt you, in the end, it's mosquito eradication more than anything that will deal with this. Is that the right way to look at it?
Not all mosquito species need to be eradicated. There are many that could well be useful, for example, for pollination purposes. Mosquitoes are excellent pollinators for plants and so on.
And is there also perhaps a more high-tech way of doing it to do with introducing different genes into the population of mosquitoes and this kind of thing? Would that overall be a better way to try and tackle this rather than what seem like fairly haphazard methods like this?
You could go high-tech, populate the mosquitoes with a new sterile sub-breed. I doubt if the Manila health authorities have the inclination or the time to do that. Also, keep in mind, there is this whole thing is kind of a reflection of the cobra effect where the British authorities back in India were put a bounty on cobras. And the legend is that the Indians started farming cobra, so where a solution makes the problem worse rather than alleviating the problem.
Professor Vikas Mehrotra. And that's it from World Business Report.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.